Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Achtung Millwall supports the Lions Food Hub, and all of our advertising revenues will be donated to support this fantastic initiative. It's now based at the Lions Centre on Bolina Road, and it's run by our own Kelly Webster. This is a friendly food bank supporting families in the Bermondsey and SE16 area. If you can help support the Lions Food Hub in any way, please visit at Lions Food Hub on Twitter or get in touch with us at Achtung Millwall. The Lions Food Hub. Come on, you Lions.
You're listening to Achtung Millwall, broadcasting from the beautiful South Burnley. Accept no substitute.
Well, hello, dear listeners. Welcome to the first of two special editions, in actual fact, that we're going to put out today, Friday the 22nd of October. Today is actually the day before birthday. My birthday tomorrow, Friday, Saturday, 23rd of October. I'll be 61. blimey, O'Reilly. So yeah, it's my birthday tomorrow. So I thought I would put out an edition for a couple of reasons. Firstly, just on a very personal level, as you may know, I suffered a heart attack in June. Quite a major heart attack, in truth. 100% blockage of my left arterial artery, well, LAD. I can't remember what that stands for. Anyway, it's a left-sided artery that feeds my heart, which was 100% blocked, totally out of the blue. No pre warning. I've never been in hospital in my life, and to be honest, I've never truly been ill like most blokes, and I think we all listening to this show probably all fall into this trap a little bit. I bet you do, dear listener. I went through life really not slightly thinking I was a bit immortal. You know, you can go out and do whatever you want, whenever you want, and with a bit of rest and recuperation, you'll be back in the game next night. You know how it runs. You've heard that song before. Anyway, so yeah, I keeled over in June. It was touch and go in the moment. I got very lucky. My wife called the ambulance. They arrived very quickly. The paramedics were on site very quickly. And I was taken by chance, really, when you read of other stories that go on in our world right now. I got lucky in being taken into Barts, which, lo and behold, turns out to be a world leader in heart surgery. I had what they call a stent fitted, which is a miraculous operation. They basically enter your artery at your wrist and go up your arm with a wire of some sort. I wasn't really with it enough to pay close attention. I didn't know what was going on. They must have given me some kind of happy pills of some sort. So I was kind of awake and aware of what was going on, but I didn't really care about it. They go up your arm, around your shoulder, take a left turn into your heart, and where the artery was narrowed, they fit what's called a stent, which is a kind of, I think of it as like a thing that pushes the artery apart slightly, so you get a bit more width and the blood can flow. And the moment of danger, I think, probably truly ended once that operation was finished, because that's a very delicate operation. And it's a curious mixture of the everyday, because it happens quite a lot, I understand. But it's also miraculous, or scientifically miraculous. I don't believe in religious miracles, but I do believe that science can produce miracles. And that's what was performed on me. So basically since then I've been recovering. Anyway, that leads me to this week, where it's my birthday week, as I've said already. And I was actually signed off of the books of the local cardio team this week. So, you know, they don't need to worry about me. I'm still in touch, obviously, with a general practice locally, the doctor. I'm on all sorts of tablets, and I think I'll be on tablets for the rest of my days, but they're not, apart from getting used to taking them, which is actually been the hardest part of the whole thing in some ways, is the living your life around the going off of the iPhone whenever the alarm goes for tablet time. So basically, yeah, I just wanted to say thank you to all of the listeners, people on the message boards, and people privately have sent me get well messages. It really made a big difference, and I'm not one of life's soppy kind of people, if you like, but it surprised me how much difference it did make to know that people were thinking about you. So I just wanted to start off this special show with that. Because at one point on that Saturday morning in June, well, I might not have been having a 61st birthday, so I thought it might be worth recording. Again, I've never really been a birthday type of bloke, really, but I thought as I've survived a near-death experience, it might be worth just looking back all those years back to 1960, October the 23rd, when in Guy's Hospital, a baby was born, and that baby was me, son of Murray and Bert Hart, my parents, who were at that time living in Bermondsey. I believe at this point, when I was born, we were living in Southwark Park Road, what is now a patch of grass right alongside the Stanley Arms. I understand that we got a flat a few years after I was born. It was probably about two or three when we got a council place in Grange Walk. And part of the reason was that this private rented house, old Victorian place, began to fall down. Bits of it started to fall apart. And one of my uncles always took great pleasure in bringing that up when alcohol would pass lips at Christmas. That place fell down. I do remember it as a baby. Bits frame, freeze frame moments. Going to an outside toilet. Yes, an outside toilet, kids. And I remember looking out the window with my dad. I don't know how old I would have been. It's my first ever memory. I could only have been 6 months or so. And him talking about a kid. Well, I don't know why the word kid stuck in my head. All these years, I still can remember it now as I speak. Strange are the images that you think of, especially after a year where, like many others in our lives, you know, we've all been suffering with COVID and other stuff, regular kind of conditions. So you kind of think back. But I do remember sitting on my dad's knee, looking out the window, looking at what was then a shop. I think it was a grocery shop, a lady called Mary. I remember Mary's name. And it's now a minicab office on Southwark Park Road, right opposite the Stanley. Anyway, I'm digressing. So, yeah, I was born on the 23rd. So it might be interesting just to look back to see what were Millwall doing. I was, just been born. I didn't know what Millwall was, or had no, pre-knowledge that had come to be an important part of my life. But on this particular day, this would have been a Sunday, Sunday. It would have been a Sunday. The game had been played on the Saturday. It was Wrexham. Millwall away at Wrexham, winning the game 1-0 thanks to a second half goal by Burridge. And I do have a match report from Wrexham 0-1, played on the 22nd of October, day before I was born, 1960. And the headline from the this would be from the People. Only a paragraph. We didn't get much. We're Division 4 in those days, listeners. So, you know, you really don't get much attention in Division 4, do you? Millwall defence is solid is the big headline. And then just one paragraph. Wrexham 0, Millwall 1. Stop saying Millwall's defence is feeble, it says. Stop saying Millwall's defence is feeble. Wrexham's eager youngsters, 9 goals in their 3 previous games, couldn't find a weak spot in this clever Millwall barrier. Alan Anderson, too canny to be outwitted, was in complete command at centre-half. The half-backs Dennis Jackson and Paddy Brady disheartened the Wrexham wingers, but oh, those Millwall forwards, and that isn't intended as a compliment, they floundered until Burridge headed in. And from what I've read, that was in the halfway through the second half, Burridge put us one up at Wrexham in front of 9,000. And we won the day. So the day before I was born was a Millwall win, albeit in Division 4, but they all count. We would actually go on to finish sixth in the table in the 1960-61 season. Just a few points off of the top four promotion slots, as they used to have it in those far-off days. So there we are, a win for the Lions. Not it would have made much difference for me at the point of being born. My mum, actually, she entered me, this is a total tangent, I remember she entered me in the South London Press's, I think like she called it a Bonnie Baby contest. I've got some photos, I might stick it out with this, just as a one-off. I've got some like, professionally, I think they sent the press photographer around to take some photos of me with her as kids. It's one of my favourite photos, actually, baby in mum's arms shot. And I think I won it. I think she said I won it. I don't know what the prize was. It wouldn't have made much difference to me at that age. But, yeah, so South London Press's Bonnie Baby for 1960. How about that? You didn't know you were talking to a celebrity, dear listeners, did you? There we are. The Mill team for the game at Wrexham. Let me find that team for you before I waffle any further about the South London Press's baby photo competitions. So here we are, 22nd of October 1960, Wrexham away, 1-0 win. In goal, Walters, not a name, so I've picked him out as one of my players to have a look at, Walters. And then we have Jackson, Pat Brady, Dave Bumpstead, Anderson, Howells, Broadfoot, Jones, Ackerman, Burridge and Hinshaw Wood in the Millwall team that particular day. Now, thanks to a fantastic book that our co-presenter for the history show is Neil Fisler is bringing out, I've got some details on some of the more obscure names, one I haven't heard of before, one or two I had, but I've dug out some names and details of players. Now, Neil's book is called The Who's Who of Mill History. It's a wonderful production. There's going to be another show which I'm going to put out at the same time as this Happy Birthday to Me show. I recommend it to anyone who's interested in Millwall Football Club. It's a book listing an A to Z list of every single Millwall player. And it really is, as near as damn it, every single Millwall player in those 130 odd years, however long it is since 1885. It's a wonderful production. Neil's going to be putting it out from November the 13th. It will be on the victorpublishing.co.uk website. I've been privy to a PDF copy of it to do the show with him, the other show, and I've nicked a couple of players because it's going to be a wonderful prep for any kind of prospective podcaster out there that wants to sound like they know their stuff. Then you're going to need this book. I wasn't blowing smoke up his backside when I said to him in the show, in the interview that I did with Neil, I put it on a par with Lions of the South in terms of being almost a definitive reference work for any Millwall fan interested in the history of our club. Neil Fisler, Dave Sullivan, the Mill Who's Who, and it's going to be on victorpublishing.co.uk. I think he said it comes out on November the 13th. So anyway, back to this particular fixture, Wrexham 0, Millwall 1. I picked out some names, and I hadn't heard of this name. William Anthony Walters, in goal, goalkeeper, 1960-61. He played just six games for us. The regular keeper at that point was Reg Davis, who was far more famous, and Reg the Cat Davis, as he was known. But I was interested, because I kind of love the obscure backwaters of history generally, but also Mill history in particular. And Neil and Dave's book is fantastic for finding players like Bill Walters, who I hadn't heard of before. As I say, 1960-61, just six appearances in a Millwall shirt. He was born in Swansea in September 1931. His career had taken in a few clubs, Blackpool in the 1950s, Southend, Swansea Town, as they were, Wrexham, Millwall in July 1960, hence him taking the field in this particular win at his old club Wrexham. Usually Town, Merthyr Tydfil, Llanelli, Haverford West County, and then a couple of spells further at Llanelli and Tom Pentry. He made his Millwall debut versus Hartlepool United, 15th of October 1960 in a 5-2 win. So I'm just going to read the pen picture that the boys have put together for Bill Walters. Not the most well-known player ever, but I like the idea in these kinds of shows of just illustrating players that aren't necessarily the best known, because I think there's as much value in the lesser lights as there is often in the big names. So Bill Walters failed to make a Football League appearance before joining Wrexham, but during his time at the Racecourse Ground, he would pick up two Welsh Cup winners' medals in 1957 and 58. He was signed by Millwall as an understudy to Reg Davis, much more famous goalkeeper, winning four of the five games that he played in. The only reverse came in the FA Cup when he was beaten four times in the first 20 minutes during a 6-2 hammering. Bill left after a season for Usually Town, later returning to Wales, where he worked for the British Steel, the old Nationalised Steel Company. Doesn't exist anymore, does it? Until he retired in June 1960 and managed the works team. Retired in June 1990, managing the British Steel works team in Wales. Bill Walters. Looks like he's still alive. Thank you, Bill, for, you know, if you do get to hear this particular show. As I said, we will go on to finish sixth in Division 4 this season. These were tough times at the Den. The 50s were really defined by the impact of the war that had finished in 1945. We never really economically recovered at all, in all honesty. It's where we found our level as, largely speaking, a third division side, and although we did fall into the newly created Division 4 in the late 50s, but it was these were tough times. And the 60s would get better and better as they went along, but this was still very much still the shadow cast from the end of hostilities in 1945. Now, I've picked out a second name, David Bumpstead. I've heard the names. I think it's an unusual name and it just stands out. But he's another player from that team that won at Wrexham the day before I was born. So David John Bumpstead, I've picked him out here. Midfielder, David Bumpstead, 87 games and 8 goals, 1957 to 1962. Born in Wennington on the 6th of November 1935. He died in Kent in August 2017. His career took in Royal Air Force. He was in the National Service, as so many young men, including my dad, in National Service. Ashford Town, Hitchin, Uxbridge, Tooting and Mitcham, Middlesex Wanderers, then Millwall. After playing for the Lions, he went to Bristol Rovers. He was playing manager at Brentwood, Wingate and then Chelmsford City. An England amateur international, Dave Bumpstead. After his football career was over, he became a clerk at Ford's. These are the details that this book is so good at, and I love them. I love these details because I think they resonate with your own life. I mean, Dave Bumpstead would have been the same age as my dad, and so you get these details of working class life in a very different time and place, and yet I remember it, and it's a really weird thing to say. To find yourself where your own life, I think I might have said this before, your own life starts to feel like history, you know. So football then, very different. It was still a working class game. Players gave up the game and then went back to work at Ford's, as Dave did. He also worked for the Port of London Authority. He ran an off licence, owned pubs and had some property interests. His brother Bob also had a spell on Mills Books and Amateur. I'm reading all this from Neil's book. In case I sound like I am some kind of expert, the credit for this goes to Neil Fissler and Dave Sullivan for these kinds of details. It's an immense work. I mean, years in the production. My last choice from Millwall winning at Wrexham was another name, Ackerman. Alfred Arthur Eric Ackerman. South African, born in a place called Daspoort in 1929. Alf Ackerman was our centre-forward, 1958 to 61. He played 81 games and scored 35 goals. That's not a bad return. He passed away in 1988 in Dunatar. I guess that's in South Africa. His career took in Pretoria Municipals. He also played for Hull, Norwich, Derby County, Carlisle and Millwall. After leaving the Lions, he would play as a player manager at Dartford, Gravesend and Northfleet in 68-75. Alf made his debut for Millwall in a 3-1 win at Oldham on 31st of January 1959. He was known as AK-AK, a reference there to anti-aircraft fire. South African AK-AK won a third division North title with Derby County in 1956 before joining Millwall 3 years later after Lions boss Jimmy Seed had made two unsuccessful bids. He scored 7 goals in his first 14 games and was the leading scorer in 1960 with 18 goals, but was released in 61. He then became player manager at Dartford and Gravesend and Northfleet. He ran a newsagent and tobacconist shop in Kent. And then he returned home to South Africa, where he passed away aged 59 in 1988. Different world. There's a picture of him there. And as all players of that era seem to be look like, I don't know if they aged you. I think it might have done the hard life, the tougher living conditions of the time just made everyone look like they were 10 years older than they possibly were. Wearing the classic royal blue and V-neck, white V-neck shirt of the time. Great, great shirt. So, yeah, there we are. Big thank you to Neil, A, for allowing me to refer to his book. It's printed and produced on the 13th of November. Includes an absolute mine of information. So you're going to expect to hear a lot more from me with these kinds of details in future, dear listeners. So, yeah, Who's Who, and that's out on victorpublishing.co.uk. Now, just out of interest, because it's my birthday, so this is a special show, and I'm going to do it for me. I thought I'd have a look and see what else was in the news. I don't know if you ever do stuff like this, dear listeners. One thing I love to do is to look at old newspapers. There's always a mine of wonderful trivia and detail in them. And another strange thing, and I've got three very different front pages from the Sunday papers on the 23rd of October, whilst baby Nick was being born in Guy's. But somehow the past, what's that saying about the past isn't past, it hasn't even gone away? I can't remember where I read that. I think it was a book about Ned Kelly. So I think that's where I read it. So the past hasn't passed. It's never really gone away. And here we see three different front pages and one back page, just out of interest. This is off topic now, going off football. But the Sunday Pictorial, which was the Daily Mirror, Sunday Mirror, 23rd of October 1960, is for the newspaper of the Young at Heart. And it cost 4D, four pennies, four old pennies. We're the Young at Heart listeners, you and me, aren't we? So anyway, the Sunday papers back then were always full of salacious titillation for their readership in quite austere times still at the end of the 50s, early 60s in Britain. And you need a bit of excitement for crying out loud. So the Sunday papers here have teenage girls rioting in jail. Now, that's not there's the opening plot line for a film designed to, you know, raise the temperature of the reading vicars and, ex-majors of Britain. I don't know what it is. Rioting teenage girls at Holloway Women's Jail barricaded themselves in the recreation room and defied prison officers to come and get them out. Furniture smashed in, recreation room siege, it says. And there's a picture, a grim-looking picture of the front gates of Holloway, which is now a redevelopment site. I think it's Peabody redeveloping Holloway Jail. Screaming and swearing, the frenzied girls jammed heavy furniture against the doors, smashing and ripping everything they could lay their hands on, defying all appeals to calm down and come out. Oh dear, oh dear. It's what a story. I like that story. So I've chosen that as one of my three Sunday front pages. That's half and half with Lady Chatterley's lover, D.H. Lawrence's rip-roaring book of Abandon. It's an exclusive announcement concerning this book will appear in the Sunday Pictorial next week. They've got to wait a week to find out what the exclusive... Now, there's a picture of D.H. Lawrence. I've never actually seen him bearded. He looks a bit like a hipster, D.H. Lawrence. So there we are. On the back page, there's a great story. Nell is unlucky in love. Nell McGrail, is a widow who won £200,000 on the pools 3 years ago. And she flew herself with factory worker Albert Cooper. There's a great picture of Nell and Albert. Looks like in some working man's club. Nell's got like a discreet sherry glass, the kind of thing that Annie Walker might have, nipped a little sherry with in the Rover's Return. And there's Alf, who's a bit of a chap. He's still married, Alf. This is the crux of the story. Nell's won the pools, and she's taken up with her fancy man, Albert Cooper. And there he is sat next to her on the kind of working men's bench seats, fag in hand, of course. This is 1960. And anyway, she wants to get married to him. She's flown him from up north, I guess, down to London to go to the motor show. And as the report has it, she could buy her any car that she wants. Nell, she's got $200,000 in the bank. But all she wants is to marry Albert. But there are grave problems, it says. Albert's first wife died when their child was born. And he gave his newly born daughter into the kind attention of the woman who is now claiming to be his wife. He's a bit of a chap, Albert, isn't he? So he's given the daughter away. And this woman is refusing to divorce him. She's saying, this is from Wivenshaw in Manchester. My answer to my husband's request for a divorce is no. This is the wife. I would lose my £5 a week maintenance money, and I've got a stepdaughter, Pauline, to consider. She says, so chap or rotter. I think he's a bit of a rotter, Albert. And he's carting around Nelly with $200,000 in the bank. And no wonder he's got a soppy smile on his face sitting there. There we are. So that's the Sunday Pictorial, as it was called. Not the Daily Mirror, Sunday Mirror of 23rd. And finally, so we have to bring this to a conclusion. And finally, yeah, I'm going to bring it to a conclusion with the People, Sunday People. And this is probably quite an appropriate story for the birth of the young Nicholas Hart in Guy's Hospital, 23rd of October. I think I was born about early morning. I think Mum always said about 4 o'clock, something like that. Anyway, it is an appropriate story for me. English bride of African prince in love drama. Couple flee palace. This is the Nigerian palace for a secret tryst. The beautiful 19-year-old English bride of an African prince announced triumphantly tonight that she had won the dramatic battle to recapture his love. He still loves me. We made it up, she told me, half laughing, half crying in her happiness. This is the red-haired Princess Carol Kymers, former Bournemouth art student, who's married one King Freddie the Kabaka of Buganda. Uganda, it's not Nigeria. Apologies to any Nigerian listeners, I might be doing you a disservice. This is report is filed from Kampala in Uganda. And there indeed is Princess Caroline lovingly hugging her man, Prince Freddie. Wonderful story. I like this. I like this stuff. It's going to get all the kind of the pulses racing across England as they read that. There we are. Happy birthday to me. Just before we close, dear listeners, I hope you enjoyed this little. It's a personal indulgence, to be honest, this show. But I want to just publicise a Twitter friend of mine, and I'll meet him actually. It's a walking tour of the Isle of Dogs. Rob, the cabbie, is doing his walking tour of the Isle of Dogs on November the 13th. That's an international break weekend, so you can give up your Saturday, leave aside the pulsating excitement of Zampa Road for 1 week, and come on a walking tour of all of the old grounds for Mill Rovers, Mill Athletic, from Glengall Road all the way round the Athletic Ground and North Greenwich and the back of the Lord Nelson. I'm going to be there with Rob. I'm looking forward to it, actually. He did invite me on the previous walking tour that he did earlier on in the summer, and I wasn't able to make that. But now that I've been signed off from the attentions of the local cardio team, I can walk for miles and miles and miles. So I'm going to be there November the 13th, 2021. There's a link on Twitter. I will repost it a few times. It'd be great to see as many as possible on Rob's walking tour. Apparently they're very good, and I'm looking forward to being a member of the audience as we walk around all these fantastic historic locations in our home on the Isle of Dogs. Do keep an eye out also for Neil Fissler's Who's Who interview. You'll see another show going out at the same time as this. And there will be links as to where to buy it from the victorpublishing.co.uk website come November when it's printed, November the 13th. So thank you for listening to this. Thank you for indulging me. It's a slight bit of a sprawl of a show in some ways, but hey, it's my birthday, so you know I shall do that. I'll be back on Sunday in the aftermath of the Stoke game. Got a couple of ideas for some shows next week as well. So until Sunday, dear listeners, thank you for listening. Thank you to everyone who sent me good wishes for over the summertime during my health scare. It's nice to be out in the woods. I mean, obviously I've got to make some lifestyle adjustments, but it's nice to be out in the woods now. And I'll be back on Sunday after the Stoke game. So until then, it's arrivederci Millwall. Bye for now.
Achtung! Mehlball.